You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, welcome to Cubs PS Plus, a Northside Numbers game, a weekly podcast that dives headfirst into the analysis of hot topics driving Chicago Cubs baseball. I'm your host, Mike Waller, a lifelong Cub fan, full-time baseball stat nerd, and sometime youth baseball coach. Cubs PS Plus is part of the Bleacher Bunch Productions on the Fans First Sports Network, joining great shows like The Sun Ranto Show, Cup of Cubby Blue, and Baseball Rabbit Hole. The Bleacher Bunch feed is available wherever you get your podcasts, and Cubs PS Plus will always be available, ad-free, to Patreon supporters at patreon.com/CubsPSPlus, where you can support the show and find a variety of benefits, starting for as little as a dollar a month. In addition to the podcast feeds, you can also find me on Twitter or X, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, Blue Sky, and YouTube, all at CubsPSPlus. I spend on the baseball metric OPSPlus. Love the pod or hate it, please drop a review wherever it is you find your podcasts. If you've done that, thank you so much. Maybe you can share an episode with a friend. Welcome into episode 70. No Cub player has ever worn number 70, so this will be the Joe Maddon episode of this podcast. Joe needs no introduction. He's the only manager to lead the Cubs to a ring since the William Howard Taft administration. There's still a surprising number of free agents available, but I think the Cubs are close to done, and the roster will be rounding into shape in the next couple of weeks. Today, I focus on the position player half of the active roster and get into who is locked in, who's on the bubble, and which directions the Cubs might go. Are you ready? I'm ready. Here, we go! Have you been to spring training yet this spring? I haven't. I'm not going to make it this year. I did go last year. It was a blast. But I have enjoyed watching the games on TV. I know there have been a couple games not on the tube, and it's a little bit wild. Like, I remember a time when I would get myself all amped up as a kid to catch, you know, maybe one or two games on WGN every spring. Now the vast majority of them are televised. It's great. Tune in. There's some guys having interesting springs. I mean, Owen Casey's popping off the page. Several other guys, Joe Hudson's having a nice run as a non-roster invitee, potentially as a backup catcher. But today I want to talk about the roster. So the Cubs have Cody Bellinger in the fold. I think the Cubs got him for the kind of deal I think a lot of us wanted. It's a short-term deal. It's a three-year deal, $80 million. He's got two opt-outs. It's perfect because the Cubs have outfielders coming up through the system. The Cubs may have a couple first basemen coming up through the system. And it's a good chance for Cody Bellinger to make a big chunk of money this year. He'll make $30 million this year. And he can see if he can build on what he did last season. If he can, he may opt out after this year or after next year. If he can't, the Cubs are, you know, worst case scenario, he's injured. He's back to 2021, 2022 form. The Cubs have a guy with lefty power who's probably still going to hit you 20-plus home runs. He'll still play some pretty good defense, and you're stuck with him for 3 years. I mean, the Cubs, as long as they make the decision, as long as they're continuing to develop talent and they make the decision that they'll spend through that $80 million, there's not really much downside here. And what that does is opens up flexibility, and that's what I want to talk about today. So the Cubs are going to have a lot of really interesting roster decisions coming up. A bunch on the pitcher side. We're gonna set the pitcher side off for the moment. So I think with Bellinger in the fold, I think on the position side, I think the Cubs are almost certainly done signing free agents, bringing in new players. Now there's always a chance for trades, and I'll just throw out the caveat right now. You know, one or two deals could completely derail everything I talk about today, and that's fine. That's cool. Then it'll give me something else to talk about in episode 71. But I think on the position player side, there are a lot more interesting questions about directions the Cubs might go or things the Cubs might want to do versus the pitching side. I think the pitching side has a lot of interesting questions about which guys do I take, especially when you start looking at who has player options, who doesn't. They brought in some really interesting non-roster invitees, but I'm going to do that in a separate episode. I think that's just a different sort of, that's more of a who than a what, why, or a how, which I think is what the position player discussion is. So to start with, let's walk through what they are going to take for opening day. And I'm projecting everything to opening day. Not all the kids who are playing well in the minors, right, or in spring training right now, are going to make it to the majors. I'll use Owen Casey as an example. He is tearing up the spring training, the Cactus League right now. I think he's hitting 520 in the spring. He's hit some bombs. He leads the Cubs, tied for team lead, I think, in hits for the spring. He looks amazing. He's also not on the 40-man roster. He's behind a number of other guys. He's still young, has not spent a lot of time at AA. And I think it's almost certain that he's not going to make the active roster opening day. And that's going to disappoint some fans, but I think that's just the way it is. And I think that's okay. I think go let him have some more minor league experience. He's going to wind up probably starting AA. I guess there's a small chance he could go to AAA. But once you're in AA and you're producing, I've talked about it a lot. We've seen it. Christopher Morel, a number of other guys. You get to AA, you're just a call-up away. You know, you're now in range for a big league call-up if you're playing well. So guys like him are not going to make it. But let's talk about who is in. So the Cubs are going to have, it's a 26-man roster. And every team has a maximum 13 pitchers. And I assume, unless there's some weird injury situation, maybe a short-term injury, I assume the Cubs are going to go 13 pitchers, 13 non-pitchers. That's pretty common. That's what most teams do most of the time. There are a few stretches through the year where it may make sense. You might have a couple position players who are down for a few days, but you know, maybe not bad enough to go on the injured list, where you might sacrifice a bullpen arm for a few games and call up an extra bat. But short of that, most teams are at 13 pitchers. So that's my assumption going in. 13 pitchers, 13 position players. Which means you have 10 in the starting lineup, which means you're going to have you have 9 in the starting lineup. So you're going to have 4 on the bench at any given time. So let's walk through who is set. I think it's a given that Yan Gomes and Miguel Amaya are going to split the catcher position up in some way, shape, or form. My guess is they will be maybe a slight lean Gomes to maybe 50-50 early in the season, and my hope is Amaya plays well enough to gradually start taking over number one so that when Gomes' contract is up at the end of this year, gives him a chance to, I think he might retire, but it gives the Cubs the opportunity to have somebody under contract settled as that number one catcher. Now, first base is a question mark. There are a lot of opportunities, so I'll set that to the side for the moment, but nobody at first base right now is locked into the roster. Second base, Nico Horner is going to be your starting second baseman, barring injury. Dansby Swanson's playing shortstop. It looks like Christopher Counsell, even though he said, you know, third base is not going to be settled as of opening day, it really looks like they're going to give Christopher Morel some runway at third base, which I think has to happen. I've talked about that for a while. I think Morel being able to play third base would be the best possible thing for this team. He's got a clear power bat. He's 24. He'll be 25 this season. He's maturing as a hitter. He did show some growth last year. And you want that bat in the lineup. And it would be ideal if he had a position. And he hasn't had one. He's bounced around a lot. And Craig Counsell has made it clear, certainly in the spring, that he wants Christopher to focus on third base and just focus on work on that glove work, get settled, have a consistent routine, try to get locked in as a hitter. And so I'm taking that to mean that I hope that Morel is going to be the starting third baseman opening day. Now nobody will start every day. There are going to be some mixing and matching. But either way, I think third base or not, I think Morel is a lock for the opening day roster. Ian Happ, starting left fielder. Now he's down right now with a hamstring strain. We'll see what that is. They've said it's mild. Hammies are always difficult to predict. They respond in different ways. So for the moment, they're optimistic about him for opening day. So for purposes of this analysis, I'm assuming he's going to be on the opening day roster. Center fielder's in question. Again, there are some guys in play. Probably Cody Bellinger right now would be probably the default position at center field. Seiya Suzuki, right field, would be your default. He's certainly locked on this roster. He's going to be the starting right fielder as long as he stays healthy. And there are a few other guys who are definitely locked in on the roster. Cody Bellinger, I mentioned, is definitely locked on the roster. he will either play center field, first base, or potentially even float around. I mean, he can play all three outfield positions. As good as he was in center field and as good as he was at first base, he actually won his gold glove in right field with the Dodgers. So, I mean, he can play any of those spots. It's going to be fine. Craig Counsell has said over and over and over again that Michael Busch is going to be the starting first baseman. So I'm counting him as a lock for this roster. And then it came out in the last day or two that Craig Counsell told Mike Tauchman before spring training that he was going to get a spot on this active roster on opening day. So that's 10 guys. That potentially gives you, just out of those 10 guys, it gives you Michael Busch at first. Actually, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yeah, it's 10 guys. Yeah, because it gives you Gomes Namaya at catcher. Let's say Michael Busch at first base. Nico Horner at second. Dansby Swanson at short. Morel at third. Bellinger or Tauchman in center field. And then the other one to DH. So that fills your lineup with a backup catcher. So there are three more spots. So where are the Cubs going to go? They have a bunch of different directions they could go. They could focus on defense. And that might mean that might be a scenario where you bring up more young outfielders to potentially provide the gloves. You could also focus on power. You can focus on roster flexibility. You can focus on youth. Give the kids a chance to play. Some of the things that come into play, and we'll start talking through individual guys, are the number of options the players have left. You know, if a player has no options, I'll use Mike Tauchman as an example, and this may be why he was guaranteed a roster spot. Mike Tauchman has no options. So he either makes this team out of spring training, or he gets traded, or he gets designated for assignment, which would probably result in him being traded because he's too good to just release. If guys don't have options, it basically locks them into an opening day roster or nothing else. Other guys, if they have options, like Mastroboni is one. I think he's a guy who could be very valuable to this team, depending on which direction the Cubs decide to go. He has minor league options left. So you can kind of kick that can down the road, make that decision later, assign Mastroboni to AAA, let him go down. He's always hit AAA pitching. I'm sure he'll go down and rip AAA pitching again. He hit a home run the other day. I mean, I think he's a good player. But guys that have options could go down, and you can, again, decide later. And then the 40-man roster. I've already talked about Owen Casey and how one of the obstacles is getting him up. And if you look at the Cubs' 40-man roster, there's just not a lot of slack in there anymore. So when Cody Bellinger was signed, Cubs wound up trading Bailey Horn to the White Sox to clear roster space. Now, the guy that got back is a young starting pitcher. Well, I'm sure we'll talk more about him early in the season. I think I'm going to have Greg Zumach on hopefully sometime in the next month or so. We could talk about that. But, you know, Bailey Horn's a guy that they were pretty high on as a left-handed arm. But this roster now just doesn't have dead weight on it the way it did like a year ago. A year ago, there were guys they were hoping would pan out, but if somebody didn't or you found somebody else interesting, there were guys that could go. I mean, right now, the roster is full of guys who are either, you know, prospects who were recently added to the 40-man roster during the Rule 5 period, or there are guys who have had success in the major leagues. There's not a lot to just move. So if you're going to add, it doesn't have to be an outfielder for an outfielder, but if you're going to add Owen Casey to this 40-man roster, you know, you look at Hap, Kevin Alcantara, Cody Bellinger, Alexander Canario, Pete Crow Armstrong, Brendan Davis, Mike Tauchman, Seiya Suzuki, like, who's going away? So at this point, there's no reason to rush Owen Casey up. Let him go to AA. If he's killing the ball and he's hitting 370 with 20 bombs the first half of the season, he might force his way up. And that's awesome. That's a good problem to have. That's also a point in the year later where you can see who's performing, who's not. If somebody having a bad year, is there somebody with no options that you think maybe you can slip through waivers and, you know, have them clear waivers and then sign back on a minor league deal? I mean, there are a bunch of options at that point, but there's no reason to rush that up. So for those last three spots, and we'll sort of talk about a fourth, if Ian Happ is out, starts the season on the injured list, that opens up another spot, probably for one of the young outfielders, probably either PCA or Canario. But I think the positions where there are some question is first base, third base, and center field. Now, I think Morel's going to start at third base, but, you know, he's not been great defensively there. I mean, he played a lot of third base in the Dominican League, kind of a mixed bag of results. They're working him now. He's not going to win a Gold Glove over there. That's fine. The question is, will he hit enough to out-hit his glove? And can he be good enough over there? If he can be passable over there, then he's definitely a bat that the Cubs want to have in the lineup. And it goes to a position which still leaves that DH position open. And that DH position is really important now. So the Cubs have options. You know, well, every team has options. Now, if the Cubs had been able to sign, say, Shohei Ohtani, then your DH position is filled. That's done. Everybody's good with that. But unless, if you don't have a dedicated DH, then what you want to do is you want to load yourself up with 9, 10, 11, 12 hitters who can all do something well. You know, you might have a couple guys that crush righties, a couple guys that crush lefties. You might have power options, contact options. And then you can use that DH space to put in a favorable lineup against a particular starting pitcher. You can use the DH to give guys like a half a day off. They did last year a bit with Ian Happ, a couple stretches where he got a little bit banged up and he could still go up and hit and get on base, but he didn't have to worry about, you know, using his legs to play left field. It also means some of these guys who maybe aren't stellar defensively, you know, we're hoping Morel can be passable at third base. We're hoping Michael Busch can be solid at first base. I don't think either one of those guys are going to be great defensively. And so it gives the flexibility to be able to, you know, like on a day where you're not going to play Bellinger in center field, put Bellinger at first base and let Michael Busch DH. It also gives a chance for kids to play. So I think some of the kids who are in play for more playing time this year are obviously Busch, Morel, Matt Mervis, Pico Armstrong, Alexander Canario. Brennan Davis has looked really good in spring training. Now, he got hit with a pitch the other day when the concussion protocol and was in concussion protocol a little longer than I think people expected. So hopefully he's okay. He's a guy, he's so good. He was one of the, I think he was a top 15 or certainly top 20 prospect in baseball going into the 2022 season. And everybody thought like 2022 was going to be the year that maybe he would come up and get a shot to play. And he had a little bit of a rough spring, got off to a rough start in Iowa. That's when he had that back injury. He wound up having surgery. Came back last year, was still a little injury plagued, had some other injuries that I don't think were related, but it's once you've got something in your back, it's hard to not be related to anything else. But he has looked really good this spring before getting hit by that pitch. So I'm hoping he can finally catch a break at some point and get back. And I think he would be a long shot to start the opening day roster in Chicago, but he's a guy that if he's actually healthy, all those skills he had before, that top prospect status, those skills haven't gone away. He can still mash. He can still run. He still plays good defense. And if he can go back to AAA, get himself established, show that he's healthy, have a good couple months, and he's a guy that's, you know, potentially available to come up and fill a spot. And then on top of the young players, they also signed a bunch of really interesting non-roster invitees. So guys who are not on the 40-man roster, guys who have had past major league success, who the Cubs brought in to take a shot, see what they look like this spring and see if they can fill a hole. They will not all make it. Now, some of them may agree to sign a minor league contract and go to Iowa. Some may opt for free agency. A lot of times these contracts, even if they do sign a minor league free agents contract, have opt-outs. So if they're not on the 40-man roster by May 1st or June 1st or June 15th, they have the ability to go ahead. Like if they're crushing it at Iowa, but let's say let's go through them for a minute. So David Peralta, he's an outfielder. He's had good stretches in the past. Garrett Cooper, Cubs signed him out of Miami. He had a really rough 2023, but he had been good the previous couple seasons. He was an all-star in 2021. Dom Smith, who was always hit pretty well. He was somebody that was on the free agent market last offseason and went and had a solid year. He signed a minor league contract with the Cubs. Jorge Alfaro at catcher and Joe Hudson also at catcher. Hudson's been killing it this spring as well, so he's pushing really hard for a roster spot. One thing that works in Hudson's favor is he actually has options left. So the Cubs could sign him and also send him down. So when they evaluate those guys, they're going to have to figure out. And I'll add David Bodie to that. David Bodie is not he's technically a non-roster invitee because he's not on the 40-man roster. He's still under contract with the Cubs. This is, I would think, his last season. After this season, the Cubs can buy out his remaining time through an option, through a club option. he's a really interesting case. He got off to a really cool start. He did some really cool things in 2018. I mean, that I'll never forget that walk-off blast he hit off the ultimate slam he hit off Washington in the playoff chase in 2018. It ended Washington's playoff chase that year. It was amazing. Two outs, bottom of the ninth. Cubs down 3-0 on national TV on Sunday Night Baseball. Bodie falls behind 0-2, gets the count to 3-2, and then just smashes one to dead center. It was one of the most amazing moments I've had as a Cubs fan that don't involve winning playoff series. It was so cool, and I will love Bodie forever for that. And whatever, Bodie's taken a lot of criticism for the 5-year contract extension he got and the way he played after. That contract was nothing. I mean, the Cubs took a shot at extending a young guy who looked like he could be anywhere from a productive bench bat to maybe a potential starter at a position and be able to contribute. Signed him for 5 years, $15 million. $3 million a year is nothing. So it really didn't set them back any. It's just he had some injury problems. There was a year where he didn't really hit, and he just found himself on the wrong side of the numbers. And so now he's not on the 40-man roster. The last couple springs, he's been outstanding. Now, last year, he had an outstanding spring and then went and had a kind of a mediocre year at Iowa. We'll see what happens this year. He's not going to make the opening day roster out of spring training unless there are a bunch of injuries. He's just behind too many other guys who potentially do things as well or better than he does that are already on the 40. So you don't have to let anybody go. You don't have to force a trade in a short time window. But he'll be interesting to consider as we walk through. So let's talk about first base. So it seems like Michael Busch is the guy they want to start at first base. It makes sense. I mean, I've seen talk about, Dom Smith had a couple hits yesterday in his first spring training game. Maybe Dom Smith starts at first base. The Cubs traded away pretty significant assets. I mean, they traded Jackson Ferris and Zaire Hope. Jackson Ferris is probably within a year or two of really busting out in terms of the prospect rankings as long as he stays healthy. They traded away really, really significant prospect capital for Michael Busch and Yency Almonte. We'll see about Yency. Yency hasn't appeared in a spring training game yet this year, so I'm not quite sure what's going on there, but we can talk about him on the pitcher episode. But Michael Busch is a guy that they've invested in. They definitely want to give him a chance. They also have Matt Mervis. Now, Matt Mervis has not had super great spring so far, but he's shown he doesn't have a lot left to prove in AAA. If he goes down to Iowa, he will go down. He'll hit pretty well, hit a bunch of bombs, show a bunch of power. He'll walk. He'll do all the things. In the minor leagues, pitchers are a little bit scared of him. That wouldn't be the case in the majors. Now, he came up last year, and he had a bit of a mixed bag. I mean, on the whole, the numbers were not good in his 99 plate appearances last spring. It was last May into June when he was up. He wasn't great, but he didn't get a lot of run. When he was being sent down, he was starting to hit the ball pretty hard. He had hit in some, tough outs, tough ABs, but the numbers just didn't work. Then Cody Bellinger, even after they got rid of Hosmer and Mancini, Cody Bellinger got hurt, so he played less outfield and took over first base. So that kept Mervis in the minors. But he's somebody who, I've said a lot in this podcast, the last 2 years, the Cubs have missed on opportunities to determine really who Matt Mervis is. Can he play at the major league level or not? And at some point, I talk about this all the time, but prospects are a perishable commodity. I mean, they're prospects until they get too old to be prospects, or they're prospects until they show they can't play, or they're prospects until they get injured. And Matt Mervis is kind of bouncing on the side, really killing it at AAA and not getting a lot of chances at the big league level. So he's a guy who potentially could be in play for first base, could be in play for a DH position, could be in play for a bench bat position. There's also a point where you just want to see a guy up. Now, there are younger guys. We talked about Owen Casey. Owen Casey just needs to be playing every day. He needs the bats every day. That's probably the case for Pete Crow Armstrong as well. Those guys are both young. They're like 21. Casey might be 22. Those guys have so much time in front of them. Just have them play. Now, if there's a line, it doesn't have to be literally every game. If there was a path for PCA to come up and be on this team, we'll get to the outfielders in a minute, and he could play 3 to 4 days a week in a situation where Craig Counsell could put him in there on the regular as a defensive replacement and then pick starting pitchers that match up well with his skill set, put him in a position to succeed, like that could be really good. But if he's going to be a bench guy playing, with one or two starts a week, whatever, like just let him go down the minors and play. But now, Matt Mervis is 26. He'll be 27 later this year, I'm pretty sure. Might be 27 now. Let's see. I've got it right here. He'll be 26 this year. He is about as good as you can be in AAA. And now it's at the point where if he can contribute as a bench bat, if he's a guy who can come in and, you know, it's hard to say platoon with three left-handed options at first base, but if he can come up and play part-time, if he can DH against certain kinds of matchups, maybe it makes sense to start getting value out of his bat as opposed to just keeping him in AAA. And then also at first base, in addition to, you have Bellinger, who can play a good outfield or a good first base. So again, like if Christopher Morel can stick at third base, if the DH spot is kind of open, it gives you the opportunity to play Michael Bush and Mervis, or it gives you the chance to put Bellinger at first and let Bush or Mervis DH. But also at first base, they have, you know, a few different non-roster invitees. So they've got Garrett Cooper, who I mentioned, was a previous All-Star in Miami. They've got Dom Smith. And so if one of those guys comes in and really pushes for playing time, you know, they could get that position. They have a lot of options, but it could also get crowded fast. My guess is, I would think Cooper probably has the best shot at coming in and maybe getting a job just because of what he's done in the past. He's coming off an injury, so he's not played much. And he might be a guy that needs to start in AAA. Just kind of get back, show he's healthy and productive and all those things. And then we look, you know, second and third base are set. We'll go to third base. So the Cubs want Morel to be there. Can Morel play there? We don't really know. And so then you look at other potential starter options would be Nick Madrigal, who started there a lot last year. I think Nick kind of is what he is at this point now. He's a guy who's had a ton of lower leg injuries, and he got pulled yesterday because of cramping in his hamstrings. Now, cramping is not necessarily serious, but every time Nick Madrigal has anything tied to a lower leg injury or tied to a lower leg, I get concerned about injury because he's shown that he can't stay healthy. So we'll see about that. Patrick Wisdom can play some first. I forgot to mention him at first base. He can play first base or third base. He's power, strikes out a ton. He'll occasionally just go on an absolute heater where you just got to play him every day, regardless of starting pitcher, until that heater's over. Because during those little runs, it's like he goes completely unconscious and just crushes everything. Probably don't want him as your starting third baseman. Now, if Morel doesn't work out right now, that probably forces Madrigal into the starting lineup at third base. And Madrigal is a Major League Baseball player. He's a Major League hitter. He is a poor man's Luis Arraez. You know, he'll play solid to good defense at second base and third base. The problem at third base is his lack of arm strength requires him to play a more shallow third base, so he has less range. And you'll see when he catches the ball, you know, he's several steps to get himself going. He can get it over there when he has to on the short notice one or two times, but the play you won't see him make very often is playing deep, going to the line, and then throwing across the infield to get the guy at first base. He just doesn't have that arm. It's not his skill set. He can play a good second base, probably not ever winning a gold glove, but he will not embarrass himself over there. He will definitely make all the plays at second base. And he'll make a lot of contact. He doesn't strike out. He makes a lot of contact, very little power, a little bit of gap power. He might hit a home run every year, but not much more than that. He would be ideal with some team that, you know, is a strikeout heavy team, maybe doesn't have somebody locked in at second base, and Nick Madrigal can go be their starting second baseman. Go hit somewhere at the top of their lineup, make a lot of contact, move guys along, make the plays defensively. And if he can stay healthy, that can be productive, because he's shown through stretches, both with the White Sox before he came over to the Cubs, and then certain stretches when he was healthy with the Cubs, he can go hit 315 to 330 for long stretches. He hasn't shown he can do it over a full healthy season, but I think the skill set's there if he's healthy. He's also a guy that needs to play. I think he's best when he's playing every day. So if he's not the Cubs' starting third baseman, he can be a contact bat off the bench, but he doesn't hit as well when he's not playing every day. So that's one that is a little bit difficult for the Cubs, I think. Another option at third base would be Miles Mastroboni. Now, he's a guy who, if you listen to my podcast, you know I'm high on him. He's a young player, came up through the Rays system. The Cubs traded for him December of 2022, before last season. And he's a guy that brings you a lot of things. He doesn't, you know, it's probably never going to be a future all-star. I'm not trying to argue he's a great player, but he's the kind of player that every good team has a player like him on their bench. He's fast. He can play six positions. He's got a good enough arm. He can handle velocity with fastball. He bats left-handed, and he has a little bit of pop. He hit 16 home runs in 2022 with the Rays AAA team. He had one or two home runs last year. He's already hit one this spring. He definitely has some gap power. He's got the speed to stretch, you know, single into a double into a triple. And he really struggled the first half of last year. The Cubs put him in, whether it's the Cubs or David Ross, put him in an awful position to start the season. So he's already a guy that fans were just mocking his name and didn't know him and whatever. And they come up and with Seiya Suzuki hurt, the Cubs leave camp with two outfielders on their roster. They had Happ for left and Bellinger for right, and they were just going to fill right, or Bellinger for center, and they were going to fill right field with Mancini and Mastroboni and Wisdom and whatever, and it worked exactly the way you would have thought it was going to work out. One thing I like about Craig Counsell is that I think Craig Counsell does a very good job on average of putting guys in positions where they can succeed, whatever their talent is. You know, if you're Cody Bellinger, just go play. If you're Dansby Swanson, yeah, you're shortstop pretty much every game. With some rest, I think Counsell will get the guys some rest. But the Cubs put Mastroboni in a really tough spot to be that early season right fielder, a position he's played. He's played over 2,000 innings in the minor leagues in the outfield. So this isn't like they pick some random dude who's never played the outfield to put there. But Wrigley Field in right field is very difficult to play. A lot of pressure to try to stick in the big leagues for the first time. And he made second game of the season, there was one ball that he probably, any natural right fielder probably would have caught. If he saw that ball today, he'd probably catch it. But he laid up on it, didn't catch it, and instantly the fan sentiment turned. After that, everything he did sucked for a good length of time. He was pressing to hit. You could see it. Big struggles. So he gets sent back down. But he wound up coming up later in the season and really went through a great stretch. I mean, he really helped carry the Cubs in July when Dansby was down and Nick Madrigal was hurt. He was able to play some second base, a little bit of shortstop, some third base. And, you know, he started to hit the ball well, get a lot more comfortable. I would love to see him on the roster, but I'm not sure he's going to make it. But he's a utility guy who can play, you know, just about anywhere. Move on to the outfield. So coming into this offseason, one of the big questions was, what about Pete Crow Armstrong? Can PCA win that center field job? I think a lot of people overreacted to the, you know, 19 plate appearance, 0-for-14 sample that he gave last September. He was getting sporadic playing time. He wasn't, again, to the point of Ross versus Counsell, he was not being specifically put into positions where he could succeed. He was just sort of being put in here and there. A couple times he was given starts because of his glove, and that's going to happen. And to some extent, he doesn't, his defense is so good. He was the minor league defensive center fielder of the year, really the, may have been the defensive player of the year, but he's got basically the highest defensive grade of anybody in the minor leagues. Some would say from complex league to the big leagues, he's the best center fielder in baseball. That has a lot of value to the point where he doesn't even necessarily have to be a great hitter. He can't be, you know, 0-for-50 bad, but he doesn't have to come up and have an OPS plus of 120 to justify having him in the big leagues. He's got to come up and probably have an OPS in the like 85 to 90 range, and anything better to get started is kind of gravy. But again, like I mentioned before, you know, he's 21 years old, so he's probably better off playing than not. So it depends on how they're going to do it. But before Bellinger signed on, if the Cubs had not signed Bellinger, I think PCA probably almost certainly would have been up. Now I think he's probably going to start in AAA. But I could see a scenario where he comes in. So let's talk about Canario. So Canario is a guy who only has, well, he has an option year remaining. The reason he has it is because of that. He got an extra year. I'm not sure if it was because of the time lost due to injury or if it was because of COVID in 2020. But either way, he was given an extra one. So if you look at the various sites, Russell Resource on Fangraphs has him at one option year remaining. SpotTrack, which does a really good job of tracking financials in baseball, has him at zero, but it is the one. He was awarded an extra bonus option year. And he's a guy who showed last year in really small flashes in the bigs, and then coming back from that bad injury he had the previous offseason, he's got massive power. He's a good hitter. He's a good athlete. I don't know that I see him sticking in center, but he can be a good defensive outfielder. And so he's a guy who, you know, this is the year now to get a read on him. Unless the Cubs trade him, this is the year the Cubs need to get a read on him. Is he a major league player? Is he a potential major league starter? Is he a potential major league star? Let's start to figure that out, because going into then 2025, if he's still on the team, he will have no options. Assuming he does, I mean, if he sticks on the big league roster opening day and stays up all year, he'll keep that option and it'll carry forward. But I would assume at some point they're probably going to get a numbers crunch, and he'll probably have to get sent down at some point. So if he uses that last option this year, they're going to want to know going into the next year, who is he? And then Brendan Davis. Brendan Davis has a couple option years left. Again, back to prospect status, he's a really, really, really good baseball player when he's healthy. Can he be healthy? That's the big question. So talking about those guys, you know, it comes down to you got to pick three of those guys to fill out the roster with Hap starting in left field. And you can go a couple different ways with that. So, you know, how big of a deal is being on the 40-man? You know, do the Cubs really love Garrett Cooper? Or the Cubs really love Dominic Smith or Joe Hudson or David Peralta? If they do, somebody has to go to make space, and then they can come up. Looking at Roster Resource on Fangraphs right now, the projected opening day roster, and I'm not sure exactly when this was settled, although Bellinger's on it, so it's been updated. They project opening day, Nico Horner at second base, Dansby Swanson at short, Happ at third, Bellinger at first, Saya in right, Morel at third base, Michael Bush DH, Yan Gomes catching, and Mike Tauchman in center. Then on the bench, they have Miguel Amaya. They go with Garrett Cooper making the roster, and then have Nick Madrigal and Patrick Wisdom. And that is a scenario that could play out. But I will continue to beat the drum. It makes absolutely no sense to carry both Nick Madrigal and Patrick Wisdom. Number one, you sort of don't have a fourth outfielder on the team at this point. You kind of do, because you got Cody Bellinger playing first base. But that forces, you know, Tauchman into a starting role. I think Mike Tauchman, it's a big year for him this year. You know, last year he came in on a minor league deal and went to Iowa first, and then eventually got the call up, and was huge when Cody Bellinger got hurt. And he had the whole CHGO, Cody Del Mendo, friend of the pod, you know, summer Mike Tauchman thing going. Faded a little bit at the end, but, you know, who is he really? Is he a guy that had a fantastic season and found the magic in that summer? Or is this who he is now? And we've gone through this with other guys before, Rafael Ortega, Schwindy City era of Frank Schwindel, you know, guys sometimes just do this. It's really cool to see. It's fun, exciting. They will have those moments forever. And I love it for them as baseball players. But who is Mike Tauchman? The one thing I do like about his skills, he's good defensively. He's probably not ideal in center field. He's a good defender in center field. And obviously, he had the walk-off catch last year against St. Louis when he robbed that what would have been a game-winning home run to end the game. So he's perfectly fine defensively. He's not PCA. He's not Cody Bellinger, but he's good. And his skill set offensively is seeing pitches and walking and being patient and making some hard contact. And that's not going to slump a lot. The question is that good enough to be the starting center fielder? I think in an ideal world, Mike Tauchman would be your fourth outfielder, occasional DH, kind of floating through the outfield, giving guys a day off. And so, you know, we'll see how that happens. Now, if Michael Bush goes to first base and Alexander Canario, you know, is DHing, something like that, we'll see. But if the Cubs really, Amaya's locked into one of those four spots, which is why we're then choosing three more. I could see Nick Madrigal or Patrick Wisdom making sense. I also think both guys are too good just to dump. You know, Patrick Wisdom gives you power off the bench, but he really only works in certain kinds of matchups. Nick Madrigal gives you a little bit of versatility because he can play second base, he can play third base. I guess Madrigal can play both corners and play the outfield a little bit, but he doesn't really play any of them very well. And Nick Madrigal is going to give you contact, but often it's not strong contact and it's on the ground. And then, you know, Garrett Cooper could certainly be a guy who was very valuable off the bench. But again, you start looking at the combo of guys, and I don't know that Cooper and Wisdom make sense. And I don't think Madrigal and Wisdom make sense. So I can make an argument for any of those three not even being on this roster at all. The one role from the roster resource projection that I think is missing is kind of that real utility guy. Madrigal's not that guy. Wisdom's not that guy. Cooper's not that guy. That would be a Miles Mastroboni, potentially a Luis Vasquez. Now, Vasquez is kind of more in that PCA bucket. You know, if he's not going to come up and be getting regular playing time, he's probably better off going to Iowa and just, you know, playing short and doing his thing and seeing if he can. You know, last year was kind of a spike offensively for him. This year's a chance for him to show was that growth and that's who he's becoming, or was that, quote, just a good year? But Mastroboni in a bench spot gives you another lefty bat off the bench. The other key right now is you look at those four bench spots that Fangraphs is projecting, they're all right-handed. That gives the Cubs with only three lefties and then Happ as a switch hitter on the roster at all. So you'd have an entire bench of right-handers, whereas, you know, Miles Mastroboni kind of switches that up a little bit. Canario and Davis are both right-handed. PCA is left-handed. So there are options there. Now, what I would probably want to do is you look at these things and you look at the kind of roster you want to fill out. So add another outfielder, add another utility player. If it were me, I would pick one of Cooper Wisdom and one of Madrigal Wisdom. And maybe just one of the three, honestly. But now Cooper's non-roster invitee, so they could sign him, put him in Iowa for some period of time until whatever his defined opt-out period is, and see what he does in AAA. But again, then you're probably putting him there competing with Matt Mervis for at-bats. So three more spots. If it were me, I'd probably go with Mastroboni and then one outfielder. Now, maybe that's where David Peralta's coming off injury. He's not yet playing in spring training, so he's probably not going to be ready for opening day. So he would make perfect sense to go to Iowa, see how he looks. If he's, you know, tearing it up, then maybe he becomes a guy you add later. I already said I think Davis is going to go down just so that Brennan can try to show that he's healthy and is going to play. So I would probably carry, you know, one of those Cooper, Madrigal, Wisdom, and then also go with, you know, Mastroboni and Canario. I think that gives you some versatility, gives you some speed on the bench. That's the other thing, the Amaya, Cooper, Madrigal, Wisdom. I know Wisdom does technically have above average sprint speed, but he's not a speed guy off the bench. It doesn't give you one of those at all. And I think Canario and Mastroboni could give you certainly one. Mastroboni definitely can fly, and Canario is fast enough that he's not some plotter on the bench. There's also a chance to bring in other people now or later. And one of the key things as people are looking at the free agents that are available, you know, the Cubs theoretically could still go out and get JD Martinez or Brandon Belt or some other bat that hasn't signed. But again, you hit that roster problem, you hit the money problem. So the roster problem is what it is. You know, the Cubs 40-man roster is full of guys who are effectively too good to just be released. Now, if the Cubs go for it, I'm sure they can find trade takers for Madrigal or Wisdom. At some point, somebody's going to go on the IL. You start looking at the money thing, and you know the Cubs right now appear to be about $3 to $5 million under the first threshold of the CBT. Now, I've seen people say the Cubs would not go after another signee because they don't want to go over the first luxury tax this year. I think that's absolutely false. I think the Cubs effectively see themselves as already over it. Now, if the Cubs are more like the roster resource, none of this is settled right now because what the Cubs project to will be determined by who they're carrying on opening day. So like they've tendered contracts to Patrick Wisdom and Nick Madrigal and a lot of these other guys. But if they get traded or they get released, then and those guys would be way more likely to get traded than released. The Cubs would be on the hook for a prorated part of their salary. So if it happens in spring training, they would be on the hook for zero of their salary because it counts out of the 162. So while they're $3 to $5 million under right now, if they were to trade Patrick Wisdom, you know, that's a couple $1 million back. If they were to trade Nick Madrigal, I think that's $1.5 million back. And so some of this is still in flux, but the Cubs right now, Roster Resource has them north of $235 million for the luxury tax payroll. And the first tier threshold is $237 million. And when you factor in that a number of players have performance escalators, bonuses, and things like that that will come into play, there's almost no chance, even if the Cubs make no more moves the rest of the season, including the trade deadline, that unless they sell, there's almost no chance they stay under 237. So they're going over. In fact, if the Cubs do nothing, there are no bonuses, and the Cubs don't sell, and Cody Bellinger opts out of his contract, Cody Bellinger right now, for luxury tax purposes, uses an average annual value. So it's his 3 years, $280 million, which is a tick over $26 million. If he opts out after this year, that retroactively becomes a one-year, $30 million contract. So Cody Bellinger doesn't cost 26 point whatever this year. He counts as $30 million. That's another $3 million. So the Cubs are basically over. So what the Cubs are looking at now is whether or not they're willing to go over that second tier of the luxury tax, which is another $20 million. So it's $257 million. So the Cubs are effectively $23 to $25 million away from the second tier. I think at the deadline, if they're having a good year, they're competing, they're, you know, leading the Central and maybe looking like they have a shot, you know, to compete come playoff time. You know, Jed has said over and over and over again that he wants to be active every trade deadline, either buying or selling. He has said repeatedly that the worst thing you can do at the trade deadline is not take advantage of guys who are available. I take him as word. He's done that. You know, he's done something at every deadline. And I think last year he made a couple deals. He brought in Candelario, which was the best bat available at the deadline, made the trade for Kwas. I think he could have done more. I don't think it was Tom inflicted. I think it was Jed's decision to not go over and set up a repeater situation last season. But I think this year he's already decided to go over. So how far over will they go? Going over the second tier is fine. It's just money. It's just a bigger penalty or bigger tax that the Ricketts will have to pay. And so if they go over that, that's cool. I'm even fine if they go over the third tier, but the third tier does bring in another factor. It takes your draft picks and at least your first one. I don't remember all the rules right off the top of my head. But it certainly takes that first draft pick and drops it 10 spots, which that can make a difference. That's a different kind of penalty that teams may or may not want to inflict. I think that may be, you know, if you're an absolute, I am all in, this is my three-year window, and then we're going to have to blow this whole thing up, so let's maximize the three-year window. That might be a time when you don't give a crap about that third tier, and you just go all in and do everything. Because I hear people say, well, the Cubs aren't all in to win. Well, what is all in? Does all in mean I'm going to spare no expense? I'm going to take my budget up to the absolute max. I will trade away any hot young prospect for that one piece I need. Like, that's where the Cubs were in 2016. They traded away Gleyber Torres, who, now they did trade at the time from what looked like a position of depth because they had Russell and Javi Baez. But, you know, that was a big time trade. They paid a big price to get Aroldis Chapman. And Aroldis Chapman was, as it turns out, the piece they needed to make the difference and win a ring. The next year, they did the same thing. They paid a really high price to the White Sox for Jose Quintana. That one didn't work out quite as well. Quintana was he was what they wanted to get. He just didn't age as well as they hoped he would. But like, that's when you're in the all-in situation. Sometimes some fans have this sense that you're either all-in or you don't give a crap. And there's a lot of space in between. I mean, the Dodgers signed Ohtani. They are blowing it out the next few seasons. Because even with Ohtani, it's a 10-year deal. I'm sure they think he's going to be good for a long time. But you never know. And players do age. So you absolutely, you know, you want to be able to say you signed Shohei Ohtani and won 4 rings. You're going to want to get those 4 rings in the first 5 years. You know, do everything you can. And on the other end, they're the A's who just, like, they're just going to spend nothing and make no effort, and that's how it's going to be. But there are all kinds of gradients in between, depending on market size and all that. I can make all the arguments that the Cubs don't spend enough, but they do spend. They will be over the CBT this year. And so what do they do next? Like, one of the questions right now is, would they sign Jordan Montgomery? We'll see what the price comes down to. It sounds like the Cubs may actually still be kind of in the running. I don't know how aggressively they're in the running. But he's a guy that's probably going to cost between, you know, a short-term deal, kind of a Bellinger contract equivalent for Montgomery, is still probably going to be up in the 20s. And so then the Cubs are starting to approach the approach or pass the second tier threshold. Now, if Jed and Tom don't care about that, awesome. It still gives them wiggle room at the deadline. But I think the Cubs are going to want to give themselves some wiggle room at the deadline, which they have right now. Right now, they could go and add multiple pieces throughout the first half of the season. And having that, you know, $15 to $20 million gives you a lot of ability, because you grab a guy at the deadline. Let's say you even grab a top-end guy. Let's say you got $25 million to spend at the deadline, and you've got some elite guy making $38 million a year. You're picking him up in July. You're probably only paying half that, and you may even be able to get the other team to kick in some cash if it matters that much. So at that point, you're paying $16 to $20 for him. So the Cubs want to leave that space, and that's what's going to be really, really interesting. Now, when all comes down to it, I told you I want to see the Cubs, or if I were the Cubs, I would go with Mastroboni, probably Canario, and then probably one of Cooper Madrigal or Wisdom. Hopefully we see some trades, which will kind of sort this stuff out. But if I had to do it, I don't think the Cubs are going to go with what Roster Resource has. I don't think it'll be a Cooper, Madrigal, and Wisdom. I think they're going to want a little bit more versatility on the bench, and I think they're going to want at least one lefty bat. So I do think Mastroboni has a really solid chance to make it. He's had a good spring. He bats left-handed. He's quick. But I could also see, even if they stick with that kind of, you know, first base, outfield, DH kind of profile, you know, maybe it's a Matt Mervis or maybe it's a Dom Smith. I mean, it's going to be interesting. And it's the biggest thing for me right now is I want to see what direction they're going to go. Like, if I think I could have pretty well predicted what David Ross was going to do, because I had seen him for a few years. I kind of knew his mindset, and I've watched Council in Milwaukee, but it was always hard to know what he was doing in Milwaukee, because I was not that up on their system. I was not that up on all the details of what was going on. And then their ownership also had way less ability to spend than the Cubs do. So it was hard to always say necessarily what was maybe Council's real line of thinking, or Council just doing the best he could with the random assortment of parts he was given. So, but I think right now, I think if they go Cooper, Madrigal, Wisdom, and Amaya, I think that, you know, hinders defensive flexibility. It hinders overall, you know, defense. I think it hinders power a little bit. It actually doesn't hinder power. That's good. They're good on power. But I think it's the defense flexibility in youth. I think this is going to be a year where we see a lot of the kids play. So we will see. And maybe, especially since he started spring training late, maybe Garrett Cooper even starts the year at Iowa and see how it goes and winds up later, as long as he's playing well and good, which opens another spot. If Happ is out, I think you definitely see either Pico Armstrong or Canario added. If Happ starts the season on the injured list, you could easily put Tauchman or Bellinger in left and give Crow Armstrong a lot of run in center field, or Canario. You know, Canario could play left field, show his bat off a little bit, see what he can do. But it's going to be really interesting, and I think as you watch this now, focus on, I mean, just enjoy baseball, because baseball's great. But when you're watching and watching the younger guys and kind of the fringe bench guys, like, think about those last three spots, because that's what they're all playing for right now. You know, the rest of the guys, Horner, Swanson, Morel, Happ, Suzuki, Bellinger, Bush, Tauchman, you know, they're playing to get themselves ready, you know, so they're fresh and ready to go on opening day. Bush, to an extent, is still competing for the first base spot, but I think Council's all but said enough to tell me he's probably going to get it, unless Bellinger's playing first and Bush is DHing. But I think he's going to get some run. So watch those things. A ton of college baseball out there. You know, go watch guys play. Baseball is here. I know it's been warm in Chicago. I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina. We're in the 70s this week. It is absolutely gorgeous. baseball weather is here. I've been evaluating little leaguers, and our season's about to kick off. I've got a son on the middle school baseball team that's got first game next week. Like, this is baseball season. It's finally here. It was such a long, painful off season. Go find some baseball. Go enjoy it. And we'll talk soon about the pitching side. Thank you for joining me today. If you like this episode, please drop a rating and review wherever it is you get your podcasts. And share the episode with a friend. Just a few seconds from you gives me great feedback and helps other Cub fans find the show. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, Blue Sky, and YouTube, all at CubsPS+. And check out the Patreon page, patreon.com/CubsPS+, to help support the show. As always, the theme music for this podcast is Prospect Park West by Jerry McCoy. This is Mike Waller, host of the Cubs PS Plus podcast. Every day with Cubs baseball or talking about Cubs baseball is a great day. Go Cubs!